So right before I hit record, we were just talking about Jimmy just said, "Oh, that's like 10 years. That's crazy."
Yeah.
And I wanted to pick, and I'm picking up a conversation we just, the three of us just had for the
Yeah.
people that are listening, because I was looking at our Patreon supporters today. I was, you know, we always thank our top supporters, and I was looking back at the other people, and I went ahead and sorted the list by lifetime of pledge. Okay. So the other people have supported at different times, but Jared Shaw has been supporting this show consistently since May 17th of 2015.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Jared, thank you.
Thank you.
That's crazy. It's not a small amount of money over that time.
Yeah.
So that's crazy. And he's not the only one. He's definitely the oldest one, but like Jacques, I don't, I Spies, I don't know how to say your last name. I'm sorry, Jacques, but that's 2018. We got Gary Burkhart from 2017. Oh wait, they didn't actually put him in. Oh, it put him in join date. Anyway, we got a bunch from 2015. Laura Kampf, March 1st, 2015.
Thank you.
Unbelievable. So not only is it weird that that's even possible that we've been doing a podcast for that long, but that there are people who have consistently been supporting the show over that amount of time. They are investing in us, which is like a little connection to our topic today. But I think that's really incredible. And looking back at, you know, people who we've known for that long, who are still around helping us do this and helping us get together. And I mean, we just finished talking for 20 minutes before we even hit record about life stuff and about other stuff that's not going to be in the show, you know, and that's partially possible because of those people. So thank you to
Thank
them.
you, thank you.
I know it's a weird way to start the show, but I did. So how's it going? What are you guys up to?
Oh, I just showed you guys a picture. I'm trying to find you. I lost you on my screen. There you are. I just showed you guys a picture of the floor, the main floor of the graveyard
I
house.
didn't see no
Yeah.
floor.
Yeah, there was no floor.
Good point.
It's funny when you start scratching the surface. A few weeks ago, I am working on an episode of the graveyard house. I always am. Even though I don't talk about it, I don't show too much social media on it until it's ready to go. But there's always something brewing underneath. It's been really cold, so it's been limited. But in these last few extremely cold months, Mike and I went in there and I said, I need to make the main house floor level with the floor I just built in the extension, the part that had all the new foundation bits. And I started peeling up layers of floor. And at one point, I realized we're at a layer of floor, which makes me completely believe the house might have been abandoned for a certain period of time. Because who would live on this floor? Like this, it's like the paint is all peeled up. Seems like the house was abandoned for a stretch of time, and someone came in and is like, let's put a new floor down. And that's one of the floors I peeled up and off. And then I got down to the main original floor, which is really beautiful beech wood, which I saved everything. And that's going to become the back half of the Cadillac. So all this beechwood flooring, it's not necessarily for a woody wagon made in the 40s, usually used ash and mahogany, but I'm going to use beech because I have it. And it's a cool story to say this used to be the floor of the old house. But I got down to what is essentially logs with a flat spot cut in them as the floor joists. Some of them were severely rotten and fixed, but still not passable for today's standards. And I just made the harsh decision yesterday. Mike and I pulled all of these rafters out. So now I don't have a main. You walk in and you could just step right into the basement from either side of the house. And I've made the decision yesterday. I'm going to sawmill up all the new timbers that go back in there. It's going to be a little bit of work for me.
I have another idea for you. Have you ever seen the movie Help, the Beatles movie?
Yeah, a long time ago.
Okay, so in Help, I always loved this when I was a kid. They walk up to the front of this townhouse. This is a long way around for a joke. They walk up to the front of this four townhouses, and they all have individual doors, and they all walk into their doors, and they open the doors, and they go inside, and it's all one big room. And when they go in, each person has their own individual little space. One of them, I can't remember who, you walk into this flat floor, and then there's stairs that go down into this little like sitting area bed lower sunken spot. And as soon as I saw that picture with the floor gone, I was like, oh, well, he doesn't need to put the floor back. He needs to put stairs down into a like lower, I don't know what you call it, But yeah, you need to make a cool little mid-century modern sunken hangout spot.
Have you seen a couple times on Instagram, it was a thing in the 60s and 70s to do a sunken floor.
Yeah, I guess that's what it was.
Yeah, a sunken floor. It was like a chill spot, so you could like chill and hang. It's like a dry hot tub, basically. And there was an Instagram going around where these people own this cool 50s house, and they realized there was a sunken floor, and they peeled up their... They peeled up the rug and they're like, oh my God, what is it? And there was a sunken floor in front of the fireplace. So they restored it back to the way it was originally. Cool.
Yeah. When you're telling the story of the house of like, you think it was abandoned at one point. Last weekend, we just saw this movie called Here. It's a Robert Zemeckis film and it's got Tom Hanks in it. And the whole movie is filmed from one camera angle. And it goes back and forth through history and the future of this house. And you see, like, before the house was there and there were Native Americans there, then there was a colonial time, and then you see previous owners and it moves forward into current day. And it's all from one camera angle. And you get to see the history of this house, or mostly the history of this particular property. And it's not my favorite movie, but it's very interesting, and it might make you think of your home and your area a little bit different. It's really well done.
Cool.
And that's called Here.
Cool. It's funny. I saw a thing also recently. R. Crumb did a famous series of cartoons of what life is like in America, and it shows land and then the various iterations of generations of what happens to that piece of property from the same camera angle.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I think I've seen that.
It's a famous little sequence of drawings he did. But no, so the floor's pulled completely up, and now I have to go harvest trees either on my property or just go buy some. I can buy uncut trees from the local sawmill. They'll sell them to me. And then I'm going to lay out the floor and do like a partial timber framey kind of floor build back. I was really torn on pulling up the floor joists because they're all half trees. They're 8-inch, 9-inch diameter trees with a flat spot cut on them. But none of them are straight. And the nostalgia of looking up and seeing, oh, look, they're half trees. But the amount of time it would take me to sawmill up the floor is definitely less time than it would take for me to diligently level that floor with shims and this and if I just put a new clean floor in that's nice and level, it'll be easier. Plus it's more fodder for a camera, which is a real decision.
And I mean, you know, all of those pieces that you took out will become something for camera eventually as well.
I'm not gonna throw them. There'll be some parts of the house here and there for sure.
In case you're interested, I texted you guys a link to this, but I'm also gonna put it in the show notes. I just found an article about, it's called A Masterclass in 60s Furniture, The Set Design of the Beatles Help. And it's bunch of photos from the movie of all the different, like, these really cool lamps and chairs. David, you're going to like some of this stuff.
Oh, I'm going through it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Man, I need to watch that movie again. I loved that movie as a kid. So goofy. It's so silly, but it's so cool. Anyway, there's some cool stuff in there, like the couches and... And it's funny because it shows Ringo laying in his little sunken-in bed thing in the floor, and it's way different than I remember. It's just a bed. It's not like a little... I don't know. Anyway. Cool. Well, anything other than the tearing out the floor? You doing anything else? Work on anything else?
Putting the Cadillac together, getting all the parts in. We got the brake parts in. A lot of engine parts. Got the fuel pump yesterday. New carburetor. I think I might also this month put together a video... The first installment of the Cadillac video. I thought I'd make one video in 6 months from now, but I think it'd be more fun to go. There's a lot to sift through as far as content goes. I'll put out a series. I might start that this month. And then I'm working on a cool project. If you're on my Patreon, I had to make a series of cast apples, and it's for a private client, which... When they give me the opportunity to release the video, everybody will know who it's for. But in the meantime, I'm just making these cast apples. I'll send you guys a picture. And they're going to be awards that this client is giving away. And So if you've been following, I've been working on those, and I'm coming to a close on those. I'm at the point now where I need to make an individual finger jointy box for each one of them, and maybe even potentially a laser. Who gets what on top? A laser label. But that's been a fun project. I'll send you guys pictures of that. But in time, everybody will see them. Patrons have seen them. And that's it. Just a little bit of everything in the cold. The cold is really inhibiting. I find myself, we talked about taking those breaks a couple of weeks ago. I find myself taking extra long breaks in the cold and just have these big spurts of energy. And then I go, that's enough for me to just sit and do nothing for an hour. So it's been a lot of those 16 degree weather.
It was like 70 here a couple of days ago.
Stop bragging.
What?
So crazy. It's not now. For a day, it was just like 70. Now it's 40 again. It's weird. Anyway, David, what about you?
I'm working on something a little experimental. I want to make this, I want it to look like glass, but using epoxy. So this isn't a technique that I made. I've seen this elsewhere, but you pour epoxy into like a flat reservoir, and then you let it cure for a couple hours. And then while it's not completely cured, you put that over a form. So it turns into like a dish. And here is, I'm going to call it a failed attempt, but I'm going to figure out how to use it anyway, because I don't want it to waste it. But it didn't, I waited too long to put it over the form that I made, and so I couldn't get it to go into the shape that I wanted. But so it's supposed to look like a glass dish. And so, you know, we poured the epoxy, we played with some colors. In this particular case, it was blue and white. And then I created the form on the lathe. I did this a year ago and it didn't come out. And so this is my second attempt. And when I did it a year ago, the form that I used, the epoxy like attached itself to the form and it wouldn't come out. And it wasn't like, it didn't glue itself. It was just the physical form of the two pieces wouldn't allow it to come apart. So this particular mold that I'm making has a slight, I don't know what, taper to it. So it can easily come out when it's dry. And so it's very experimental. I don't even know what the final output is going to look like. It's just one of those things like, I'm going to try this technique. I'm going to make a wooden base for it, and it's going to be a piece of art.
I've had similar concepts with clay. I've been thinking about, and it's only because I just seen them, so I'm just going to duplicate a process I saw, but just to get my own experience with it, make a dish on the lathe, shape of a dish, roll out some clay, lay it over it, let it dry, pull it off. Scrape and clean and get it ready for glaze and firing. It seems like an interesting, simple, but yet interesting process to get some really pretty regulated images, regulated objects.
The form that I made on the lathe, I just glued up a bunch of 2x4s, which to me, I was like, this is the easiest way to get a big chunk of wood together, then the cheapest. And if you've ever turned 2x4s on a lathe, it is an awful experience. It's
very chippy, right?
Very chippy. It's messy. It's not a fun experience at all.
I don't think I've ever turned a 2x4 on the lathe.
That's because when you look at the grain lines of a modern 2x4, there's like 4 growth rings and 4 inches.
Yeah.
Versus a 2x4 that like I've been pulling out of the house, and you look at in the 4 inches, there's 70, 80 grain lines.
Right.
Growth rings. Just the difference.
That's pretty wild. I, you know, talking about the experimenting thing, I saw on Instagram yesterday this account, and I think it was like a home renovation account, like a company that does home renovations or something. But this guy was working with Plaster of Paris, and he was kind of goofing around fixing something. But then he had this little diversion where he took a Ziploc bag, and he mixed up some Plaster of Paris, poured it in the bag, and then like smooshed it around to where it was evenly distributed within this bag. And then he set it on a table and took a coffee cup and set it down in this thing.
Oh, so it looks like a pillow.
And then he let it cure and then pulled the bag off. And you have this little pillow looking coaster, but it had all the creases and all the folds around the corner. It was so cool. It's so simple. I mean, it's like a kids' art project, but
yeah,
it showed really several fun. Of them, and it got me thinking about similarly, like, how do you take a fluid thing, put it in a container until it's not fluid anymore to get the shape of the container, you know, and what else could you do with that? What else could you use as a mold that's kind of a non-traditional mold, you know, something a little more not natural looking, but not when as mold made. I don't know how you say that.
Biomorphic.
Yeah, sure.
A few months ago, I got to tour the Sweetwater facility. Sweetwater's a music catalog company. And they have this really cool packaging area where they're packing odd shaped things into a box. And it goes into the box and they spray this, like, it's like that foam stuff that you use for your home insulation is sprayed into this box. It expands and takes up the area of the box. So this thing that's in there can't move at all. And it's a really quick process of liquid to form in just like seconds. And my thought was, I don't want to use that for packaging. I want to make that as a mold or make art out of that.
So you should talk to Matt Cremona, because he does that. He sells kits for chairs and stuff, which I have no idea how he does all the different things that he does. But he manufactures these hardwood, really nice kits, and then he puts them in boxes. And I've seen him, he has reels of him, like, laying that plastic over, spraying that stuff in, and then you, like, have to seal the box up before it expands too big, you know. But apparently that's just a system you can buy, you know.
Huh.
He bought it anyway.
I'm sure you can get it from Uline.
Yeah, probably. It's an interesting thing, though.
I had lunch with Brian Prusa yesterday, and we were talking about...
I owe Brian some videos. I'll do that today. Sorry, Brian.
And we were talking about Matt, and just, like, that dude is... He made his floors. He's making his kitchen. Like, he's making his house. Like, nobody does that. That's amazing. And, like, he... These are trees from his property that he's turning into a house.
I'm inspired by Matt. I know Matt's done that. So when it comes to this sawmill, I'm like, I'll just make my own stuff like Matt has.
Yeah. So I want to be like Matt.
He makes it look really easy. But then when you look at his giant sawmill and his warehouse in his backyard and his tree farm and, you know, and he's been investing in building this whole empire for quite a while. It's awesome to see.
The Matt Cremona empire. What's up, Matt?
Yeah. Speaking of Brian, while you guys were talking a minute ago, I flipped around the audience list in Patreon because something looked off to me about my order of people. Turns out the people that I mentioned were not the oldest ones. Brian is in the group of oldest ones.
Mm.
That's what I thought of it. He's been supporting us since February of 2015, but it actually goes back even further. The oldest one in the list is Jeremy Gunkel from December 14th of 2014.
Whoa, and we started in October.
That's wild.
Wow.
So I was, you know, I mean, I appreciate all of them, regardless of where they sit in that list, but I knew something was wrong about my list there. Anyway, Brian's a good guy. Brian's been around for a long time. Let's see. For me, what have I been doing? Oh, I've been recording the course, and I've made some pretty good progress on that over the last week or so. And that's going really well, and I'm in kind of a weird spot with people buying the course. Like, I want to make sure that everybody who's buying it now knows that it's still worth buying, but it's going to get better. It's going to get updated. And so I'm trying not to people are like asking me questions about the course. I'm trying not to talk them out of waiting because it's just going to get more expensive. They should buy it now. But at the same time, I'm still recording it. So it's going to be a little while before those updates are, you know, anyway, I'm trying to figure that out while recording it. And, also working on the next project, which is a kind of weird one in that it's, this guy I know who used to be a professional soccer player, he now does soccer training, and he trains a bunch of people I know. And he's having a tournament for a game called Panna, which is basically one-on-one soccer in a little pin. So it's a closed space with two goals on the sides, and you get in and you just battle in a small space with one person. So he's having this tournament. So he asked me to build him this court for this thing. It's a six-sided, each side is 8 feet long, six-sided court with two goals built into it. It's like 3 feet tall. It has to be able to come apart into individual panels, but the goals have to be able to come off, and it has to withstand, you know, like people playing soccer in the small space, and you got to be able to get in and out of it. So there's all these like weird little, it's not difficult to build, but there's all these little things to think about, storage and movement and all this stuff. And he needs it in like 10 days. So, I recorded a bunch of course stuff, and then I quickly designed this thing and got it approved. And then now I'm just building this weird structure that is too big for me to put together. So I can't actually, I can't test it really. And I'm not sure how I'm going to paint it because it needs to be all painted. It's just a lot of material and a lot of panels. So I'm doing that. I think it's going to be really cool though. Once it's done, it will be something that will immediately go into use. You know, I'm going to finish it within a couple days of this tournament, and then it will go in and I'll be able to get footage of people playing this game in this thing, and it should be interesting. And so I'm kind of switching back and forth. The cool thing about that though is that I was working on it yesterday, cutting tons of plywood and 2x4s and, you know, all this wood, basic woodwork, not fancy woodwork, but basic woodwork. And at the end of getting all this stuff done, I went to walk out of the shop and I looked down and I was just completely covered in sawdust, like head to toe. And I smiled because it was the first time in quite a while that I had done that kind of just slam together 2x4s and plywood and get something done and route and cut and just, you know, it was just a little more manual. And like, I love solving problems, but this was not a problem solving thing. This was just a cut the wood, screw the wood, move the wood. Like, and everything smelled like sawdust and I was covered in it. I don't know. It felt good. It was mm-hmm. something I hadn't done in a while. So, yeah, between those two things, that's kind of what I've been doing. And I've been shipping a lot of the little, webcam mounts,
nice.
Which is cool. And I've got a little station put together for assembling them because I've got little stainless steel pins you got to knock in to put one together. And I, you know, go to bed and I print 5 of them overnight, and next morning they're done and I just assemble them. And it's kind of neat, kind of getting a process for that, which is cool. And I'm already coming up with ideas for a version 2, ways to make it better and more flexible for different monitors and different cameras and that type of stuff. But I haven't actually started designing any of that because I'm busy. So, one of those days. We had kind of a topic. David, mm-hmm. you had an idea that you had brought up. You want to talk about that?
It's hard
I'm not
to
sure
take
how
ownership
we got to it because
I...
we had a big conversation beforehand and that led into this.
I can't really say I had an idea. But we were talking about investing in ourselves, investing in potential. And I made a video of a couple months ago, and it was all about collecting potential. Mm-hmm. And whether you're investing in yourself as a business or as a
creative,
more time to just rest and make stuff for myself. So I don't know where we start with this, but this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately as far as like, I need more downtime. I need less obligations. I need to worry less about business stuff. And not everything has to be a money-making on camera thing. Some things can be just for me, and I need to invest more in myself and downtime.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking, and Bob, you kind of indicated that you unconsciously, you said, I do this a lot. And the idea is, for instance, we use the example of buying a piece of property down the road. I don't know why. I had the money in the bank and I was able to buy it cash. I bought the piece of property up the road and it's sitting there, the racetrack property I'm talking about. And now it was a little investment in me and my future. and now here's the future, and I could turn around and sell it, make money on it, or have the opportunity to build a business on it. I have an opportunity to share it as a part of my investment in a partnership with a few guys. So these little seeds that you plant can lead to something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. This is why I always say, this is a little side note. This is why I always say, don't share your ideas with people. Because I specifically remember telling one or two people in my life, hey, I'm thinking about buying that broken down racetrack on Main Street. Why would you do that? Are you going to start a racetrack? I go, no, it's about the piece of land. Well, what are you going to do with it? You don't have money to do anything with it. And I said, okay, cool. Thank you. Just like cut the conversation right there.
Hmm.
Because now I see those same people and they're like, oh my God, I can't, you bought such at the right time. Who knew where the world was going to go? Who knew COVID? Like, I had no idea. I just had this little inkling of like, you know what? If I leave this money in my bank account, I'm going to spend it on tools and cars. I buy a piece of property. I don't know what's going to become of it, but I know that I'll be able to sell it for at least what I paid for it. There's no doubt about that. Anytime you see somebody with generational wealth, oh, my, that town, that street in town, that's my family name. It's because my great-grandfather bought it. Land never goes bad. It's never a bad investment, as long as you're willing to sit on it long-term. And so the idea of planting seeds like that as an example, or I do remember, it's funny, I have this is a completely dynamically different example. I have an old jointer that I saw on Facebook Market, or no, I saw it on Craigslist at the time. It's a really long time ago. And I remember going, me and Willie went in my truck and it was in Springfield, Mass. I didn't know where I was going to put it. I didn't know why I was buying it, but I bought this jointer. It's 20 inch wide, made in 1910, brought it home and plopped it in my backyard. I had no idea what I was going to do with it. I had no electric at the time over there. I can only run it off a generator. And I had nowhere to put it. It was sitting outside. And not too far away from it, I had a Bridgeport mill where I had nowhere to put it. But when I had the opportunity to get my hands on this Bridgeport mill, I got it. I had nowhere to put it. I plopped it in my backyard. It was literally sitting in my driveway right where I park my car right now. And I remember my ex is like, hey, we got our very first rental for the Airbnb in like 2014 or 2013 or whatever. And she's like, we got to move that Bridgeport. You got to get it out of the driveway. You don't want people pulling in the driveway looking like a machine junkyard. And I remember, I see those two machines as like a moment in time of where like, I just knew I needed them and I knew they would fit into my future. I didn't know exactly how at the time or why. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think too much about the rational reasons why. They weren't that big of an investment financially, maybe a couple of $1,000 between the two of them. But those were sort of the beginning of my antique tool collection, which I'm very proud of and creates a interesting dynamic to my workshop and looks good on camera, and not to mention my personal interest in antique machines. Same thing when I saw this crazy old Cadillac. Rob loves going along the crazy rides with me to buy stuff we don't need. So when I showed Rob was like, oh, cool, let's go get it. I was like, all right. So I only told Rob about it. I didn't tell anybody else until I finally showed pictures of it to people. And they're like, what's that? Is that a junkyard? I'm like, no, it's in my backyard. I got it.
It's funny. You got to, we're all very selective on who we tell our ideas to.
Yeah.
You know, one of us, I won't mention names or what we're talking about, but one of us says, I need you to talk me out of this thing.
Yeah,
I'm like, you're talking to the wrong group.
That was me. I'll just go ahead and I'll own that.
That's kind of how we got started here. And Bob's like, I'm going to ask you guys to try and talk me out of it. I'm like, no, go for it. Do it.
Yeah, I knew you wouldn't.
Yep. But yeah, that idea of planting these little seeds. And it's funny, I'll tell you flat out, when I bought the Cadillac in September or August or September, it sat there and I was like, it's probably going to go back to the junkyard. I don't know. But something attracted me to it. I was like, I saw a car that was missing 75% of its body. And I said, I want to fill that negative space.
Mm.
I immediately have a vision. I could fill that negative space, but there's all these other hurdles. The wheels need to turn. They need to not be flat. The brakes need to work. And then as me and Rob dug into the car, we started realizing basically everything is there. It's just not maintenance. And if we maintenance it, exercise it, replace some of the simple parts, we have the actual part we know we need a new one of, so we can go and have good reference for it. So as you start digging into stuff, anyway, the bigger picture here is how can you plant seeds for yourself, whether it's buying a certain type of tool or whether it's a piece of property or keeping your eye on that piece of material, you know? Well, I remember years ago buying half hides of leather with a credit card, and then the leather sits around. I'm afraid to cut into it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I just know I need it to have it near me. And now I cut into a piece of leather like I'm cutting into a piece of cheese. I don't even think twice about just cutting off a big chunk and throwing it in the laser. But getting over those fears and planting that seed of this material that's going to sit around. I don't know why 100% I was attracted to it. I didn't even know what I was going to make out of it. But just planting the seeds to develop that skill. Same with the CNC machine. You guys remember when I bought that CNC machine for $7,500 on a credit card? It was, at the time, this was 2012, 2013. It was, I didn't have that money in the bank. I bought it with a credit card, $7,500. And I was like, whatever the minimum is, $50, $80, I'll just pay that until life gets easier. And obviously it did. But investing in yourself and planting those seeds. I didn't even know how to use the CNC machine. You guys are going to laugh. The first couple times I used it with Vectrex, which I didn't know how to use either, I made 3D cutting paths. I was like, why does the machine have to literally go over the negative space with the cutting head and then cut in and cut out? I was doing a full 3D cutting path to make my logo, which means the cutting head thinks it's cutting material, but it was cutting air, and then it would dip in and cut the letter and come back out. So it had a feeler. Imagine if it was a feeler gauge. It had to literally touch every aspect of the material when it was only cutting out 10% of the material. I was like, "This. Why do people want these things? This thing takes forever."
That's stupid.
But I was cutting a full 3D path on the piece of wood that was only cutting a letter. It really should be a 2D path, which takes probably 2% of the time that the 3D path would take. But just planting those seeds and then in time learning the right way. And now I'm so confident that if I just get anything, I'm like, there's got to be a YouTube video for this. Even with the Cadillac, every time I come across a hurdle, I'm like, there's got to be. I just like, whoop, find some knucklehead that filmed himself for 3 minutes pulling a brake caliper apart or something. And it's always out there. But just planting seeds for yourself, and whether it's material, property, skills, tools, whatever.
And I think one of the – well, go ahead.
Real quick, a lot of the times the reason you buy the thing or you acquire the thing is not how you end up using it in the future. Like I'm looking at like I bought my first miter saw on Craigslist. Who would have known that I'd be using that to make YouTube videos a few years later? This microphone, I bought it because music, and now I'm using it to record a podcast. And so these potential, collecting this potential, is not always a straight path. There's a lot of left turns, and you never know. And it's sometimes it's just really cool to have that leather just sitting there waiting for you to use, and you can cut into it at any time.
But I do think one of the skills around this is learning how to manage the risk of that kind of potential. You know, it's easy for us in what we do for a living to say, like, of course I can just, I buy a tool and it'll wait around until I find a use for it. And somebody who can't justify that through their business, that's a little bit harder of a sell to, you know, somebody who's an accountant or somebody who works at McDonald's to be like, yeah, I'm just going to buy that, you know, Festool thing and hope that I find a reason to use it these days. So I do think that there is a certain amount of wisdom that you have to carry into this thing. There are many ways to invest in yourself that don't cost anything. I won't throw that out there. But if you are investing in property or in you know, tools or materials or the type of stuff that we're talking about at the moment, I think you have to use wisdom there and not just collect to collect without some sort of an awareness of how much you are investing and what the kind of like what the turnover of that investment is. Just like, you know, you buy a car, as soon as you take it off the lot, it is worth less. And the more you drive it, it's worth less. Some things, you buy a fancy baseball card with famous person signing on it, it's just going to get more expensive. Land is always going to get more expensive. So managing the risk of that potential investment or that investment in potential, I think, is something you have to be really, really aware of. But One of the things, like, we're talking about this in a business kind of financial sense, maybe. But I think, David, you and I were talking, or you were starting to talk about these kind of these moments of investing in yourself in a way that's not financial. It's about improvement, or it's about comfort, or it's about rest, or it's about, I don't know what you had in mind when you were talking about that, but I think there are many ways that we can do the same kind of thing that don't cost anything, or it doesn't cost, you know, a festool or property kind of money. And so, like, for me, I know I've talked about, at the end of last year, I talked about how I had these things that I wanted to do for a month at a time this year to try to just learn how to do this thing that I've always wanted to do. I did that for January. I did that with soccer juggling, and I started making a video about it, and the video was really boring. And I kept recording, but I don't think I'm ever going to do anything with that video, because that wasn't really the point. And I as I got to the end of the month, I realized that I was trying to take something that was about improvement, or about just, it was about me, and I was trying to make a video because I thought it might be worth, it's just not worthwhile. So I'm still going to do the thing, but I'm not going to make the video. But the thing about that was that in figuring that out, I realized that I was trying to kind of like, or I was accidentally hamstringing my own growth by trying to wrap it in content. And so I think we have to be careful, or at least I have to be careful, about trying to make self-improvement worthwhile for other people. It's not called other people improvement. It's self-improvement. And so just by other taking people. That part of it out and just trying to get better at something for me, that's the point of that exercise. And so that's what I'm going to continue to do for the rest of the year, is do those months of things. Some of those things are like soccer juggling, has no purpose. It has no, I'm not going to become a soccer player, you know, like anything more than like a goofing around level. But some things do have another purpose. Another thing on my list is learning ASL, sign language. I've always wanted to learn sign language. I wanted to learn it when my kids were small so that I could actually talk to them. And we never did. Jenny, I've talked about this for years and we just never done it. And I'm like, what if I spent a month? It's the same kind of thing. It's like not that much time. 15 minutes a day for a month. I would know enough ASL to be conversational with somebody who couldn't hear. And that's worthwhile. That's good for me. That's good for somebody else. I could be the person in a whole group of people that could actually communicate with somebody who needed help. That's good, right? So there's a lot of things like that that I think are planting seeds. It's preparation. It's investing in yourself. And it just takes a little effort. It doesn't take any money. It doesn't take any schooling. It doesn't take any, you know. So when we're talking about this, that's the kind of stuff that is currently on my mind. It's soccer juggling and ASL and juggling, juggling like circus juggling and, you know, music. And there's these, that's the kind of stuff that I'm.
Yeah. For me also, it's doing the bike and exercising, which I hate doing, but I carve out the time to do it. Because I'm just investing. I don't want to be an old man that can't breathe walking upstairs, or you know, I want to have a healthy heart when I'm in my 80s.
Speaking of that, I was watching a video yesterday. There's a guy on YouTube. His channel's named Mike FN Garage, and he does like VW restoration. He's in California somewhere, and he's done a bunch of them. And he like, it's all in his garage at his house, just lo-fi, but they look amazing, and he knows what he's doing. And so he had this video about how to stay motivated on your VW project. It was about an 8-minute video that could have been about a 1-minute video. But in that 1 minute, his point was, if you have a project car of any kind and you want to stay motivated to keep it moving forward, and this really hit me because of where the Ghia has been for so long, he was like, when you get home from work, take 10 minutes every day. When you walk in the door, you go straight to the thing for 10 minutes. You put a time limit on it and you get something done. You clean half side of this.
Exactly what I do with my car. Every day.
Take out these bolts or you something. 10 minutes and then you're done. And then you go be with family. You have responsibility. But the reason that he kind of brought that up was because he said he had this one vehicle in his backyard and he was looking at it and it was stuck and it was difficult and he was stuck on it and everything. And he realized, if he died, his wife would be stuck with a pile of unfinished car to figure out to do with. And then in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, like on top of the grief and the family and all of the other stuff that somebody has to deal with in that situation. Then they have car parts, and it's harder to sell a car in two halves than it is to sell a car that's one piece. So that made made an impression on me, like, oh yeah, I need to make sure that even though things are in progress, I need to make sure that they are in the best, at least state moving towards being finished, you know, a little bit at a time. That's easier for him to do that 10 minutes because it's at his house. My car is not at my house, so I have to go somewhere to work on it. And I can come up with plenty of excuses why it's more difficult for me. But I thought that was an interesting other thing to think about moving everything forward a little bit and keeping opportunity open and stuff, because at any point you could just not be here and somebody else is going to have to pick up the pieces. Somebody else is going to have to sell off the stuff. And, you know, Jimmy, you're talking about property, and that's something that when you're gone, somebody will sell that stuff off, mm-hmm. and will get good out of it. Like, you know, investment will pay off at that mm-hmm. point after you, which is another cool way to think about, like, what's a worthwhile investment of yeah. your time? Is it going to pay off for somebody else later?
So. Mm-hmm. You remind me of my Aunt Joyce, and she's a great aunt, and she's her husband passed away a few years ago, and he has two barns. He was a classic car restoration guy, and he has two barns full of car parts. I mean, just multiple floors in these barns, just bumper after bumper after bumper, radio after radio. And then it's all somewhat organized, but it's also not. And just car parts for days and days. And she's left with this. And her son lives in Florida. He comes up twice a year, and they do a little bit of organization with the barn. They try to figure out what to do with all the stuff. But it is just so much stuff. And I can't even imagine, like, what is she going to do? Like, how do you mentally deal with all that weight? And I think about that stuff all the time. I've actually gone through, she let me go through the barn about 2 years ago. And she's like, you can have whatever you want. And so my brother going through there, he found a moped that he restored. And there was nothing in there that really called me. And so I just grabbed a couple of books, and I was just like, I don't know what you're going to do. I'm sorry you have this huge mess. But that is something that I think about all the time.
That's tough, too, because the longer it sits there, the less usable a lot of it will be for other people, you know. And that's a shame for her to have to, or anybody, to have to figure out what to do with all that stuff. Especially when, if you're not a car person and you have a bunch of car parts. And I think about that with my toys. Like, I have these toy collections behind me, which I've tried to be reasonable about. But, like, my family, my kids don't know what any of this stuff's worth. They don't even know what most of it's called. And, like, I can't expect them to go, like, oh, dad's gone. Now we get to sell off this collection and split the money. They're going to be like, I don't know, put it in a box, take it to Goodwill. You know, I mean,
yeah.
Which is fine. Somebody else will get something out of it. But, you know, those things that we leave behind, if somebody else isn't aware of exactly what they are, then it's going to be even more for them to deal with.
Yeah.
I got the craziest collection of blenders, toasters, and deep fryers that you could ever imagine.
Mm. Is that from your dad?
Yeah. They all went right in the dumpster. I have that tendency. I think maybe we all do a little bit where, like, for instance, I know all three of us are a little bit like that with cameras. You get a camera, then the new one comes out. You get the new one, the new version comes out, and then the competitor comes out with one a little bit better, and you got to get that. My dad was like that with everyday objects that cost under $20.
Hmm.
So that was the problem. Everything he bought was just another useless thing, but it had like an interesting plug, or this is another useless toaster, but it had four slices instead of two. But he can't throw out two. You got to keep the four. Then he buys one with eight slices in case he has guests for the weekend.
I'm very addicted to...
There's no way to sleep because every room is full of junk. But go ahead.
I'm very addicted to removing friction. So I'm a Sony camera guy. So at any time Sony comes out with a new camera and there's that one little feature that's just going to make something a little bit easier, I have to sell and then get that one. And then I've been working on my office here, and I have this, it's like a dresser, but with synths and drum machines and guitar pedals, and everything is in a patch bay. And I've been selling stuff and reducing, but buying more, selling cheaper stuff to buy more expensive stuff, so I could just have, you know, what I would call the perfect setup. Yeah, the one. And I've gotten into the patch bay has 48 patches on there, and it's full. So there's basically 48 cables coming out of there. Over the last couple of weeks, I've been making all my own cables. And that is I enjoy it. Now, I've got a cable tester, I've got my little multimeter, and it's all about reducing friction. So when I want to go use that, it's just ready to go. I don't use it, but I love the idea of, but I could. Yeah, it's that potential. And man, when you talk about cameras and stuff, and always upgrading to the newest thing, and it is about removing that little bit of friction. It's just going to make life just a little bit easier.
You remind me. So last week I went to the city. I didn't tell anybody this because then all my friends in the city want to see me. So I didn't tell anybody. I didn't do any social media. Last Thursday I went to the city in the morning. I got a ride with my friend Ryan. And then Rachel goes to the city 3 days a week for her job. And I went and hung out with her at a job. But I got dropped off in the city right at B&H, and people in the camera business know B&H is one of the biggest camera retailers in the United States, and it's in Manhattan on 34th and 9th Avenue. So I got out of the car and I walked right into B&H, and I had me and Rachel went for dinner and then a comedy club. So this was in the afternoon, and one in the afternoon I got to the city and I hung out in B&H for like 2 hours and I didn't buy one thing.
What?
I walked through the entire store. I'm like, there's got to be something in here that I could spend at least like $700 on.
And it's like several floors, too,
and
right?
I checked every video camera in the stand where you could shoot the city skyline. I checked, you know, the video cameras. And then I went upstairs and I checked the action cameras and I checked the DJI section. And I actually even went to the Leica section.
My dream.
I got inspired to go look at a digital Leica, but the guy, everything was behind the counter. You couldn't touch it. And the guy was being like a little less than helpful. So I was like, you know what? I'm ready to spend like $1,000, $2,000 on a Leica point and shoot. But it just, you know what? Without a focus ring.
Oh, they're more than that. You didn't look at the price. They're more than $2,000 for a
point. No, I was looking for like the little point and shoot ones with like the fixed lens. Yeah. That's what it seemed like. I don't know. The guy wasn't being very extremely helpful. He looked at me and was like, this guy's not buying anything. So he was very lackluster.
He's like, are you the guy from YouTube?
Man. Yeah. And so I left. And then I went home. We spent the night out in the city having a good time. And the next morning, I was going to go home with her late that evening. So she had to work. So I had, like, let me go back up to B&H. Maybe there's got to be something I could buy. So I went up there, didn't get there in time. Everybody knows classically Friday afternoons at 1 o'clock, B&H closes until Sunday morning. So I got there just after one. I missed it. So I was like wandering around, and I went from there to Macy's, which is about 3 blocks away. And then I was like, I don't know, maybe there's something in Macy's that I could buy. I had to spend money.
Macy's of all places.
I was like, there's not going to be anything in here that I'm going to want. And I wandered right into the Ray-Ban display. Can you guys imagine what I bought? Oh, what I bought for the Ray-Ban display?
You got those glasses with the camera in them.
I got the Meta glasses.
I walked
in, and the guy, right away, I just saw the display. They were like 10 feet from the entrance. I walked over to the display. The salesman comes over. He's like, hey, what are you doing? And he's very nice. And I just was really nice back. I didn't act like I felt like I was getting sold a thing. And I was like, these are cool. I said, you know, I remember Jocko had him when he stayed with me last year. And I think at the time, Jocko said they can only record maybe 10 or 15 seconds. And I said, how much time do they record? Just pretending like a dummy. And he goes, oh, now they record up to 3 minutes. I was like, is that true? And then like I Googled it and it seems true. And I was like, whoa. I was like, all right, I'll take a pair. It was that long. I was there for about 3 minutes before I committed to buying a pair. I was like, I need something to play with. And then I said, I got to use the restroom. He said, oh, well, it's downstairs near the underwear display. And I went downstairs, and right next to my favorite underwear, I buy these Nike sport underwear. I ended up buying $200 pair worth of underwear.
Oh, my gosh.
But the $400 camera and the $200. So I had to spend money. But the long story is that the whole point of the story is I wandered through B&H, and there was nothing that I needed. And had I seen the glasses in B&H, I would have bought them, but I didn't see the display for them. But I wasn't looking for them. I wasn't looking for the glass. Yeah. I was just looking for anything cool to buy that could potentially be a cool video vloggy thing.
Similar story.
Vloggy cameras. None of them tickle my fancy. I said, none of these are cool.
Similar story. I had to go to Sweetwater, which is a big music catalog company. Their campus is just like they have, think of it as like a Kmart just for drums. And then there's a room that it's a Kmart size. Nobody can relate to Kmart. A Target size room just for drums. A Target size room just for guitars. It's not quite that big, but it's a massive music instrument catalog place. Just bonkers. And they also have a repair shop. So I was taking a couple things over there to get repaired. And it's an hour and a half away. So I grab a credit card. It's got a zero balance. I grab a credit card just in case, you know, I'm going to be in this cool place and it's going to be full of toys that I'm going to want. And I go there. I drive an hour and a half to drop off these things to have them work on it. And I looked around and I didn't buy a single thing. There was nothing.
You basically have everything already.
Yeah. Well, I think it was just like when there's too much stimulation, there's no excitement. There's no excitement for that one thing. And so I left and I walked, I drove, you know, a 3-hour round trip, blank, zero balance credit card. Didn't buy a single thing. I was surprised. So
I noticed last year, we're pretty far off the topic, which is fine. Last year, you know how we talked about, like, you go into Home Depot or wherever, and you just walk around, you don't need to buy anything, but you walk around and you look at materials, you look at tools that you haven't seen before. And there's still a lot of value in doing that kind of...
Yeah, getting up on
the... Getting inspired from stuff, right? But I found myself at the end of last year doing that too much. Like, I would be out, I'd have to go get something from one store, and, like, while I'm out, I'll run into Target and see if they have any toys that my friends are looking for. I don't really buy toys for my collection anymore, but my friends do. And so, like, I'm always on the lookout for them. I'll just go in there and I'll look. And, well, since I'm over here, I may as well go into this store. And I found that I guess it was procrastination or just I was wasting a lot of time. What? Apparently, I have a 3D printer coming that I didn't order. I just got an email about that. That's interesting. I got this email. Sorry.
Yeah.
So I realized last year that I was doing that a lot, and I was wasting a lot of my, I was wasting time under the guise of, yeah, I'm just like, I'm exploring, I'm looking for materials. And I have found cool things. The other day I was in Target and I found in the dollar spot up near the front, these boot trays, you know, just like a plastic boot tray to keep the mud off of your floor. But it's about this big. It's got a grid raised into the bottom of it with about a 1.5-inch square grid and a lip on the outside of it. And as I was looking around, this thing was a dollar. And as I was looking at it, I'm like, oh, this is the perfect assembly area for these little webcam mounts because I can drop all of the stainless steel pins into one of these little squares. I can put this and this. So it was a perfect, like, I randomly found a thing because I was in Target for no particular reason, right? But it cost me a dollar. I found last year that I was wasting all this time going to these places. So at the beginning of this year, one of the things I decided I was going to do is I'm not going to go in a store unless I have something that I need to buy. And listening to both of you, that is a struggle. Like that is a habit that is hard to break.
Wow.
But at the same time, I have realized as I'm driving by, I go get lunch. And then as I'm driving by Target, I'm like, I don't need anything from there. And I'm going to actively decide not to go in there. And it feels really good to be like, oh, yeah, look at that, self-control.
I'm in control of myself.
I can not go in there and waste time or money. You're on mute, Jimmy. I can't hear you.
That's because we all spent $500,000 in the last 10 years on crap we don't need.
Yeah.
Finally, we fall.
Yeah.
Finally.
But that's been a little thing that I've tried to put in place for myself this year, and it makes it so that I'm a little bit just more aware of my time. I think I'm trying to use my time a little bit better, but I also make more intentional trips to places. Like, I save up rather than I need to buy this one little bag of screws from Lowe's and I'm going to make a trip all the way out there just to buy the thing. I like save up those little things and then I have a list of stuff to get at this store, and I go get that. And I think it, I don't know, it just feels a little bit more like I'm in control and I'm not caught in this. I got to go find the new thing. There's got to be some new thing that I don't know about yet, which is, I don't know, not for me anymore. I'm trying to get out of this.
Another funny tangent story. Last night I drove to Home Depot to get something, and I needed to get three things. And I kept saying those three things out loud. And I said, the minute I cross the threshold, I'm going to forget two of them. Mm-hmm. So I hit the record on my watch and I said what I needed. And I was like, I'm never going to need to access this, but it's there. I went into the store. I found one of the three things I needed, and I could not remember the other two things I needed.
Yep.
And I pulled up my watch, and there I was mumbling to myself what I needed, and I knew what they were. It's like, as I'm making the recording, I'm like, there's no way I'm going to forget in 8 minutes what I need.
Do you ever use the location? Have we talked about this already? Do you use the location reminders on your phone and on your watch?
No,
I'm not sure.
Oh,
it's so cool. All right. So like I accidentally did this. I said to my device, hey, so-and-so, remind me to get blank next time I'm at Target. And I was thinking it was going to write that in Target because you need to get this thing at Target. But when you say that, it actually finds the location for the closest Target. And then when you get in proximity to that, it gives you a reminder. It says, don't forget to get the thing. I'm like, oh, well, that's awesome. So now I'll be like, hey, remind me to get this many sheets of plywood next time I'm at Home Depot. Next time I drive by, it's just like, go get plywood or whatever.
Oh, wow. So it's just more of a random location reminder, not necessarily a time and date.
Yeah. Cool. And you can do that. Like if it has your home or your work set, you can say, remind me this when I get home. Same thing. It'll just, when you pull up to your house, it'll be like, hey, don't forget to take the trash out or whatever. So... And that helps cut down on that missing the opportunity to get the thing that you need to get. But also, you know, you don't have to – I don't plan the trips out as much as when I'm already out. It tells me, go get these things while you're out at these different places. Because where I live, most of those shops are within a half a mile of each other. You know, all the big stores that I go to are real close. So,
remind me in the after show to tell you about the list of three things.
Are you talking to Siri or are you talking to us?
Talking to you guys.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think Siri knows what the after show is.
Don't make it up.
Well, like, Siri, let me tell you about the after show.
Yeah, that was a pretty good transition. Siri, let me tell you about the after show. The after show is more show after this show that is only available to the patrons. So unless Apple becomes one of our patrons, Siri cannot have the after show.
Mm-mm.
Sorry. Dear Tim Cook, please become a patron of our podcast.
Tim Apple.
Big thanks to everybody that supports our show, that those people that have been around since 2014, all the way up to the people that join now. We're grateful to every single one of you for supporting the show and for, letting us talk through this stuff. I hope our random conversations are at least enjoyable, if not useful. I hope they're both, but one or the other is good. I'm happy with that. Big thanks to our top supporters. That's Nick Ryan, Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Maincrafting, Rich at Low End Design, Odin Leather Goods, Sean Beckner, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Jeff at the New Janky Workshop, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, Crabtree Creative, OMG Made, and A Pretty Big Deal Inc.
Thank you.
But also, you know, those people like Jeremy that I was talking about before. That's just awesome. And if you want to become a patron, you have to go to patreon.com/makingit. Sign up at any level. You get the after show. There was some discussion this week about on our Discord for I Like to Make Stuff. People were trying to figure out how to get the main show and the after show in their feed, like, next to each other so that they could continue. They finish the regular show and it goes right into it because they're separate feeds. And I guess somehow it's not doing that for them. Because what we do when we record is we just keep going. So, like, by the time Jimmy goes, I love you, and then I immediately go, and the after show. It's just one long show for us. Mm-hmm. But I never thought about the fact that other people have to, like, I finished an episode. Now I have to go to the next episode and find the one and then click the thing. Sorry.
What you need to do is unsubscribe from all your other podcasts. So you only subscribe to those two feeds and then just have it autoplay. And then you'll never have to worry about that separation.
Yep. That's the answer.
Cool. Well, big thanks to everybody over there. We do appreciate you. You guys have anything to recommend this week?
I looked at my history, and yesterday I looked at about, between Killing Time through all my very big accomplishments, I watched about 15 videos of Joe Cocker singing in the 60s and 70s. And if you want to see an extremely soulful singer that could maybe make you cry if in certain performances, specifically the Woodstock performance, a little help from my friends, go check out Joe Cocker. It's one of my favorites. Just Google Joe Cocker.
Cool.
And YouTube, you'll see some amazing performances. No assist. Just a crazy guy with crazy talent singing crazy songs.
The first thing that comes to mind is Woodstock and the iconic Joe Cocker performance.
I was talking to my kids about, I was playing them some Jimi Hendrix, and they've heard Jimi Hendrix growing up because I'm a fan. And I was talking to them the other day. This is a long story. Anyway, they didn't know that Jimi Hendrix played at Woodstock, and they didn't know about the Star Spangled Banner. And so we were in the car, we're waiting on somebody, picking somebody up or something. And they were like, he played the Star Spangled Banner? That doesn't sound very interesting. And I'm like, hang on a second. So I pulled up the Star Spangled Banner, cranked it, and they were just listening the whole time. And then I look back, and when he, like, when the acid kicked in or whatever, and he freaked out, it, you know, and it just goes bonkers, they're back there just like, holding their ears and kind of like, okay, is this still the same song? You know, but I love it. Anyway, what you got, David?
Going back to the forgetting things, just real quick. I have these ideas all the time and I forget them. And I thought it's just like, oh, I just have a terrible memory or whatever. And I've heard David Lynch talk a few times about he's forgotten many great ideas. And you should always write them down or record them in Jimmy's case. Because so many times I think of something and I'm like, oh, that's so good that I'll remember it. It's so good that I'll remember it. And I don't. And just like 10 minutes later, we're like, what was I just thinking? Yeah. Because our brains are always turning and we have to write things down. Anyway, my pick is it's a CBS Sunday Morning YouTube clip. And it is called New Sounds. Check out these new musical instruments. And basically, it's this little segment. Georgia Tech College has an annual musical instrument competition. They've been doing it for like 15 years. And these are all musical instrument inventions. And some of them are weird. Some of them are cool. But it's a cool little clip. And I think applies to the maker and all of us.
Are you guys familiar with the Frank Zappa clip from when he was on the Jack Parr show?
I don't think so.
I've seen it.
But you gotta look at it. Frank Zappa, before he was Frank Zappa, he was a dapper kid in a suit in black and white on the Jack Parr show, which was the previous to Johnny Carson, playing a bicycle. He brought a bicycle on and made music with a bicycle. And you could see the early beginnings of Frank Zappa's snarky anti-establishment behavior while he's like still a high school student, perhaps, maybe a college student.
Oh.
It's gone around.
I have it up now. Yeah, I want to watch this now.
It's great. It's great.
Yeah.
Cool. So mine is, I don't know if this is interesting to anybody or not, but I got an email from a company who is coming out with a laser welder.
Oh.
Yep,
and I
might be getting one of those too. The Kickstarter that's coming out February 11th?
No.
No? Okay. All right. I'm super excited about laser welders because...
So I got this email and I was like, laser welding? Wait a minute. I didn't think it was a real thing. And so then I started watching videos. Turns out it's a real thing and it looks awesome.
Yeah.
And so I found this video from weld.com and Jimmy, you and I at least have been on their podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo... That's his name, right? Bo. He gets taught how to use a laser welder and uses it in about 10 minutes. And so this video is really good because it just talks through what's actually happening and the necessary parts of doing this. And in just a couple of minutes, he's laying down these welds that are just way better than anything I could ever do in any other type of welding. And it takes no particular... It does take skill, but it doesn't take the same kind of skill.
I might have the opportunity to get one when the time arises. I think I'm going to say yes.
I mean, it seems like something that I should not get because it sounds cool, but I probably won't find a use for. But then I started watching them use it and talking about how
car.
Well, yeah, talking about how cool it was, like how temperature cool it was to the surface. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, body panels. That's the problem with body panels.
Yeah.
So I actually think I could, you know, use it. But this video walks through what it is, and it's a different brand welder and all that type of stuff. It has nothing to do with that. I just didn't know anything about laser welding, and this explains it pretty concisely. So I'm going to put a link to that. So, and then maybe we'll all get laser welders. That'd be cool.
I'll talk a little bit more about it in the after show.
Okay.
Somebody sent me a link to, I talked about the Christmas gift I got from Rachel, which is a antique handgun.
Oh, yeah.
Cowboy gun. Yeah, I think I'll talk about it in the after show.
Cool.
Just as laying it out there, because I don't remember if we talked about it here or there, but
we didn't. And Ed, it was since last week, I think, that email came in. Cool. All right. You guys got anything else for this week then?
That's it. Thank you.
If you're listening to this and you have the after show, get ready to click the button to go to the after show and it will sound as seamless as possible. Ready? Thanks
Love
for
you.
Listening.
Love
Catch
you.
Next time.
Love you.
And the after show. See how seamless that was?
That was
probably.
I didn't even notice. I didn't even hear the click.